Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we're going to be looking at the recent agreement between Ethiopia and Somalia that was signed in Ankara, and Turkey's growing geopolitical influence in the Horn of Africa. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Federico Donnelly, Assistant Professor of International Relations at Università dei Trieste in Italy, and also Senior Associate Research Fellow at ISPI. Federico's recent publications include Turkey-Africa Relations and Turkey's National Role Conception as the Center Country, Continuity or Break with the Past, and also Foreign Aid, Identities and Interests, Qatar and UAE in Sudan. Federico, I'm very pleased to have you join me today, and I look forward to a wonderful conversation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure.
Brilliant. So let's jump into it. So I think last month, a couple of weeks ago, Turkey was able to, President Erdogan was able to negotiate the initial agreement between Somalia and Ethiopia in Ankara. How influential, or how is Turkey able to mediate this agreement? Can you run us through what this agreement entails and how Turkey is influential in mediating this?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I would like to say is that this is just an agreement that could pave the way for more negotiation. So it did not solve the dispute issue. So it did not solve what happened after the MOU between Ethiopia and Somaliland, that in some way opened the rift between Somalia and Ethiopia. What Ankara and specifically Turkish government did is to put together two convergence interests of Somalia and Ethiopia at that time. What are these interests? From the Ethiopia point of view, we know that there are multiple problems, domestic problems, related to some insurgencies and protests in some different regional states, including the Amhara, Oromia, and even Afar. And then we still have the long-lasting consequences of the Tigray conflict. So from the Ethiopian point of view, this is not the right time for an escalation in the region. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, from Somalia point of view, we well know that Somalia, since 2022, so following the offensive against Al-Shabaab, starting in some way to lose ground. Nowadays, Somalia has multiple problems, of course, the complex institution building process. We've got problems between Mogadishu central government and some federal state. I do not mean Puntland and Somaliland, but I mean Jubaland, especially. At the same time, there were multiple doubts about the future of African Union peacekeeping mission in Somalia. So I think that Turkey was able to exploit these interests from both sides to put together around the table and said, okay, we can postpone the issue in 4 or 5 months, but for now, just de-escalate the situation.
Hmm. Very interesting to see how internal conflicts between within these countries play a role in doing this. But we've also seen in the past, we've seen other external countries or organizations like IGAD and you know Egypt, you know, intervene in this. So how is Turkey different from these previous interventions?
Well, you mentioned about Egypt, and of course, Egypt and Egyptian engagement, especially with Somalia, in some way could be considered as a game changer for regional balances, because we well know how the rivalry between Egypt and Ethiopia was mainly focused on the Nile Basin River. With this shift, with the decision of Egypt to get more involved on coastal area, specifically the Red Sea area and the Gulf of Aden, we in some way witnessing a shift from Nile Basin to the Red Sea of competition. And that, I think, is the one of the most interesting trends for the future. And if you want to discuss more about it, about Turkey. Turkey, during the last couple of years, was able to keep good relationship with all regional actors, and specifically with Ethiopia and Somalia. We well know how Turkey supports the state building process in Somalia since 2011. So is one of the main partners, is one of the main sponsor. At the same time, Ethiopia is one of the key trading partners for Turkey in the region. At the same time, we know how much was important the support of Turkey during the Tigray conflict war. We will know that the Turkish drones, the famous Baykar drones, TB2, became a sort of game changer for the conflict. So at that time, Turkey established a very good relationship with Ethiopian government, even in defense sector. So Turkey, in comparison with all the other regional and extra-regional actor, was able to present itself as a kind of good mediator, good broker for both sides, Somalia and Ethiopia. That's why they were able to at least open a dialogue between the parties.
Let me stay on that subject of external intervention. We've seen where, because we've had a couple of previous episodes where, so one episode we looked at the role of external interventions and the character of those that are intervening and interests. I've always said that, in my own opinion, that it is naive to assume that there's no interest when that you could have, you know, an intervention without interest. But it's all about balancing those interests with the needs of those that have been. I guess my question is, what is Turkey's interest?
That's a good question. And I think that Turkey has a lot of interest. We can usually, when we try to analyze all these extra-regional actors' interests, we divide in different dimensions. So from the economic point of view, and of course for Turkey, is important to, in two ways, from the economic point of view, to find a new market, especially for defense sector. Since 2019, defense sector became a key asset of Turkey economy. And unfortunately, Horn of Africa, and more in general, Africa, is one of the key markets for defense sector in terms of components, hardwares, and so on. So Turkey want to expand its market toward Africa. Then we have to consider natural resources. Turkey is a country that lack natural resources. There's no rare earth. There's no gas, there's no oil, and we know that they've got a lot of interest in the Eastern Africa related to all these materials. Then there are strategic dimensions. From the strategic point of view, Turkey at the beginning, when they were, when they began to be more engaged in the Horn of Africa, it was more related to a regional competition. I mean, it was following the so-called Arab Spring. So at that time, there was an increasing competition and rivalry between Turkey and Qatar on one side and UAE and Saudi Arabia on the other side. So Horn of African countries become a sort of battlegrounds for these rivalries. But then things starting to change in 2020 with the normalization process in the Middle East. So nowadays for Turkey, the region is strategically important, but not in relation of regional balances, but in relation of global balances. When we consider Horn of Africa and specifically Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, we have to consider that this is the western side or western shore of the Indo-Pacific arena. So if we think about the Indo-Pacific arena, it will be the biggest global arena of competition for the next 2-3 maybe more decades. And Turkey want to get access to that arena. And this is not only Turkey. I mean, there are many extra-regional actors that see Horn of Africa, Somalia, Gulf of Aden, and so on, as a kind of, we can say, pass through in the Pacific, a step toward in the Pacific. And this is important. This is really important from Turkish perspective, because Turkey knows that if you want to play in the future at the global stage, you have to get a position in the Indo-Pacific. And then if you see from political point of view, the interest, the main interest is not related to the Turkish state, but to the Turkish political elite linked to the AKP and the Erdogan government. Why? Because Erdogan is the leading actor within Turkish foreign policy, and we well know, and Somalia, specifically Somalia, the Turkish intervention in Somalia became a sort of billboard of his policy toward Africa. So the success or not, or the failure in Somalia could be a success or a failure of Erdogan policy. So this is why he always exploit a lot Somalia in terms of especially rhetoric and narrative, but is not directly toward the global audience or African audience, but is mainly directly to the domestic audience, to his constituency. And of course, there are multiple reasons behind. There's some more ideational one with the Muslim Brotherhood idea. So we go there and help Muslim brothers. Since the humanitarian approach that doesn't matter the religious of the people, but we are going there to help people. And we are helping people when other big powers completely neglect these people. Okay, so this is strong rhetoric in terms of Erdogan narrative. And if you want, we can stress more on this issue, because it's really interesting. The idea of Erdogan is to find a place for Turkey at the global stage. And Africa could be a way to find more popularity, more international visibility, more strategic projection for the future.
Let's stay on this. We're very interested. We'll come back to the specific on the Somalian deal, but let's stay on this. So speaking of that, we've seen a recession of the normal or the usual intervenors, the global powers, the superpowers, you know, like the West. Let's say the West. We've seen it in the Sahel. We've seen, you know, an anti-French narrative, an anti-Western narrative. We see the West receding. And that has created room for powers like Russia, like Turkey. Even beyond the Horn, we see Turkey is expanding to the Sahel as well and other places. But what I want to first ask is the kind of irony, because if Turkey's interest is to export his hardware, his weaponry, and his, you know, that skill, it will usually make sense in a context of conflict. So, and if you're looking at negotiating dialogue and politics with the Somalian and African, and look at elsewhere where they need resources, like in the East Africa, where you've mentioned, where you have a lot of resources, but the DRC, for instance, and all of the issues that are going on in there, and look at Sudan as well. So you look at, are they also contributing to the militarization or prolongation of conflicts in those? Because they have to take side, whatever the case might be, they have to take side. How are they able to reconcile that image of, peacemaker, and then having to, export your defense skills or weaponry or not?
Yeah, of course, there's a mismatch between what Turkey is saying and what in reality they are doing. I mean, they present themselves as a kind of security provider for the African countries. That doesn't mean just bring them some new weapons or other things, but Turkey wants also to present itself as a training partner in terms of anti-insurgency, in terms of anti-rebel groups and so on, that got a long history and even we can say know-how about anti-insurgency due to the PKK in Turkey, and they try to exploit that aspect. But of course, if you send a lot of army and if you send a lot of weapons, and this is what happened, for example, in Ethiopia, Turkey sent a couple of drones, TB2, and they do not have control on how Ethiopian government and how Ethiopian army forces using these drones. And you know that 1 year ago, there was a huge attack by Ethiopian drones, of course, TB2 drones against Amara forces, and they kill even many civilians. So this created a problem because, of course, Turkey and Turkey weapons has no conditionality. And that is important, of course, because it's easier for African state to buy these drones, but at the same time is important in terms of human rights and the way in which a country and army force using these drones. In the case of Sudan, this is interesting because Sudan is the only scenario where Turkey is trying to keep low profile, even though there are some speculation about a kind of support to the SAF, so to Al-Burhan, and some others said, no, they are supporting RFS because they are going along with UAE. We've got no evidences of the involvement, but of course, there could be some shipping of weapons from Turkey and from other countries, because in legal shipping, it's definitely something important and can, in some way, even boost this conflict. So, yeah, this is a risk. This is a clear risk.
Okay, let me move to the domestic side. I'll come back to this international side because there's a lot to explore there. So this particular deal, we know is an interim deal, and I think in February they're gonna be back again to discuss. But interestingly, the interim deal states that Ethiopia will continue to maybe access the sea under Somalia sovereignty. But how does that place the agreement made with Somaliland? Does that invalidate that agreement?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's why I still believe that we should not consider overestimate the Ankara declaration. Because honestly speaking, all sides, Ethiopia, Somalia, and even Turkey, didn't touch the key aspect, the key issue that is that Ethiopia want an access to the sea. They want an access to the sea in order to develop its own navy, and this is another curious issue, because behind the development of Ethiopian navy since 2019, we've got France. So even another extra-regional actors is increasing presence in the Horn of Africa. And if you want, we can talk about it. And the only way for Ethiopia to get access to the sea from Somalia is via Somaliland. because other option are not really option. I mean, Turkey is trying to present Mogadishu as an option, but we will know that the corridor between Addis Ababa and Mogadishu is not safe at all, especially outside Mogadishu. I mean, even inside Mogadishu, there's not enough control by the government forces to guarantee any transit of trade and track and so on. So it's not a real option, even though Turkey, you know, Turkey has got the concession for on Mogadishu seaport. They manage the port seaport, so they want to present as an option, but it is not an option. There's other alternative, and maybe the most available one that is also has been considered by Ethiopian government before the MOU is Kismayo, the port of Kismayo. So in the south of Somalia, on the border, or not on the border, but close to Kenya, this could be an option. Again, I think that Somalia nowadays cannot offer any alternative to Berber. At the same time, they cannot offer Berber without controlling the soil of Somaliland. So I don't see a deal. I don't see an exit deal or an exit strategy from that, the MOU. We know that in some way, maybe even Somalia is trying to exploit the change of government in Somaliland. We had election in November. We have a peaceful transition, political transition, that I think is an interesting aspect of the region. I mean, what happened and what is going on in Somaliland during the last 2 months is really interesting, because a peaceful transition, when anybody would bet on some, you know, skirmish or even fighting. So I think that we have to consider also the change within Somaliland government. We know that the new president Hiro is more open to dialogue with Mogadishu. That's true. But at the same time, in front of the opportunity to get recognized from Ethiopia or any other African and non-African country, there's no plan B. I mean, that's how they want to follow. And finally, and that is another important aspect, is to consider also one of the main sponsors of the MOU, that is UAE, the United Arab Emirates. They are even more involved than Turkey and France and any other extra-regional country. They invested a lot in terms of development of Berber seaport infrastructure. They built an economic zone. They built a road from Hargeisa to Berber. They want to build a new way from Hargeisa to Addis, to Ethiopian border, and then to Addis. So I don't think they would not capitalize their investment. So they will definitely stress more and more on that option. And yeah, maybe I'm wrong, but I hope to be wrong, because of course, if they want to persuade the MOU, this could create more problems to the stability of the region. But I don't see any other option. Maybe what could happen is to postpone any kind of recognition of Somaliland, so a kind of process in more steps toward economic partnership without any recognition. But sooner or later, Somaliland will ask something next year.
I had a colleague of mine. He's been on the podcast on two occasions now. So the first occasion was when we looked at Ethiopia threatened to invade Somaliland. But there's something interesting he mentioned. And I think you've mentioned it slightly, but slightly different. And he was saying the MOU for, you know, Somaliland is not just about access to the sea. It's not economic, because Ethiopia has other access to the sea. I think he mentioned the Nile, whatever it is. So he's trying to hint at other motive other than, you know, economic access. So I don't know if you agree with that.
I agree with that because, I mean, if they were able to implement the MOU, I think that Ethiopia could divert 10-12% of the total trade that nowadays is going or passing through Djibouti seaports. I think that one of the most important aspects from Ethiopian point of view, as I mentioned before, is related to the strategic aspect. For Ethiopia, the maritime access, especially the opportunity to get a concession to establish a military facility or military navy base, as the MOU mentioned about it, for 50 years, is important. It's important because not only for the narrative that we will know about the Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed narrative during the last couple of years. He recalled a lot the period of the empires, the period where when Ethiopia was a regional power that controlled and see the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea as a kind of strategic area of its own influence. So I think from Ethiopian point of view, it's important to get access on the sea in order to get presence in the maritime policy. When we consider the Red Sea area, I mean not only the Red Sea, but geographic Red Sea, but also the coastal area and the Gulf of Aden, we have to consider that so far there's a difference between the maritime space or maritime dimension and the land dimension. If we check, you can find how on the maritime dimension there are multiple actors who in majority of the time they cooperate in order to preserve the security. This became evident with the multiple mission operation against the piracy. So with cooperation among even big actors like United States, European players, and so on. Ethiopia won't be part of that game. Ethiopia knows that if they want to be a regional power, a real regional power, they need to be part also of the maritime dimension. And they cannot get access from Djibouti in that terms. So I think that again, we have to look not in the next 2 years or 3 years. We have to look in more future, next two decades. In the next two decades, Indo-Pacific will be the key arena. And Ethiopia want to be part of that arena as well. They want, because they feel like their own area, their own strategic natural area. So they want... They don't want to be cut off from that game. So, yeah, I think that this is an important aspect. And then, of course, there are other domestic issues and the idea to, in some way, to create or recompact the constituency, the Ethiopian constituency around the idea of the Great Ethiopia and to establish, again, a regional power, be able to sit on the table with the great players, global players, and so on. But these are more domestic issues. From the strategic point of view, maritime dimension is important for Ethiopia.
What we've seen in my own observation is there seems to be a reconfiguration of the way what I like to call the global order of things. So we see different alliances and expansion of alliances and new alliances. You see BRICS plus, you see even the G20 expanding, you see what's happening with NATO and all of that stuff. But it seems like Africa seems to be like the playing ground for where these configurations or this nest, how the power is going to play out. South Africa seems to be, and all of these players. But whilst we see all these big players like the United States, the European, you know, we're seeing middle powers like, you know, like Turkey, like Saudi Arabia, like Qatar, like all of these people trying to. But I guess the question is how. So out of all of this, Ethiopia seems to be the one that is in the continent. All of these are kind of like extra, you know, outside of the continent of Africa. But how does all of this play into that picture? I know you mentioned France is somehow indirectly behind Ethiopia also in this. So are these like funds? Are they fighting for themselves, these middle powers, to be a key major power, to have that leap? Or are they a fund for these other? Because you've seen a lot of demand for a configuration of the United Nations, of the Security Council. There just seems to be all of this. How does this play into that big picture? And see what Russia is doing as well with the Wagner Group in the Sahel and all of these places. How does that tie into that wider picture?
I think you're right. I think that Africa is not the biggest battleground, but is one of the future battleground or present battleground. But I would like to stress a point that I think is important, especially because sometimes from the European, the Western perspective, we are completely lacking this point. When we consider the area, when we consider different regions like the Red Sea or the Horn of Africa, we always talk about a better ground in terms of local actors as a passive actors. They are not passive. They've got agency. They've got agency and they are looking for their own interests. So Ethiopia, Somalia, okay, Somalia maybe is not the right example, but Eritrea, Kenya, the same Sudan before the civil war, all of them.
Rwanda,
of course, Uganda, Tanzania, they are trying to gain as much as possible from the regional and global rivalry. So in terms, or I would like to say differently, from the African perspective, the African state perspective, this could be an opportunity. The reshuffle of global order is an opportunity, definitely, because there's an opportunity to establish different partnership with different actors, maybe to stress some alignment on specific issue. That could be the financial governance reforms, that could be climate change or other specific issue, even security. And so I think it's important to understand what African state, the single one or the regional body want, what they are looking for. We will know how now African Union's got a seat within the G20, and one of the biggest point of concern is how a single seat could represent the interest of the 54-55 countries. That's a big issue. Otherwise, it could be an opportunity, a bigger opportunity. At the same time, if we consider bilateral relation, if you ask me, I think that bilateralism is coming back from multilateralism. So a single African state can exploit the situation to gain something. Of course, then we can open another debate, another discussion about the African regime, African government, African elite, if they are extracting some resources from abroad in order to consolidate their power or in order to provide better life to their citizens. This is another issue. This is more related to development and democratization and so on. From international perspective, I think they got multiple opportunity. I think that the majority of them will try to navigate in this new order. And in terms of regional balances, what we have seen during the last 4 or 5 years is an overlap among local dynamics, regional dynamics, and global dynamics. We have seen during the Tigray War, We have seen during the Sudanese civil conflict, we have seen during the Yemen war, and we have seen during Somalia instability and so on, with multiple different actors that you call middle power, great powers, or local actors that decided to stay from one side or the other. And sometimes these alignments are always flexible. So you can have a coalition or a group of country on specific issue, and then a different coalition and group of countries on another issue. The same MOU in some way polarize regional and extra-regional countries among those who support the MOU and among those who were against MOU. Okay, so yeah, I think it's of course is very interesting, but is even harder to read from an analytical point of view, because this reshuffle is ongoing, and we cannot predict what happened next.
Talking of prediction, so what do you think in the technical talk in February will look like between Somalia and Ethiopia?
Again, I think they will try to find not the solution, but my perception is that they want to postpone as much as possible the moment in which they face the real issue. I mean, we have seen during the last couple of weeks with the decision to keep Ethiopian soldiers within the African Union peacekeeping mission. That was definitely the most important thing, because without Ethiopian soldiers, that mission would be even weaker than now. So it's important for Somalia's stability, it's important for the regional stability. And I think is one of the reasons why the two sides and Turkey also decided to stress a lot on the fact to keep Ethiopian soldiers on Somali soil. And I think that they will try to find an alternative to Berber. But as I mentioned before, I don't see any alternative to Berber right now. So yeah, I'm pessimistic about it, honestly. I don't see a solution. I mean, even in terms of in domestic terms, Abiy Ahmed is not the prime minister, is not in position to move back from the idea to establish an access to the Red Sea, to establish a military base and so on, because he invested a lot during the last 12 months on the Red Sea issue. He diverted a lot the attention of the local public on that issue. So a move back right now could be a problem. Could be a problem in terms of domestic stability. He is in a difficult position because at the same time he knows that he cannot follow an escalation. He cannot follow an escalation because he's got a problem in Amhara and still has a problem with Tigray. These two groups are the backbone of Ethiopian army historically. And without the support of these two groups, Ethiopia cannot go in any conflict or war with any other. So I think again that postpone the issue is the good option for both sides. Most probably Somaliland will lose in the midterm, because following the MOU, it seemed that the recognition was almost done, but now is freezing. I do not expect any action, even though it's not easy to predict any Trump decision, but you know, there were many speculation, especially of supporter of Somaliland who said Trump will recognize Somaliland, will dramatically change I do not expect something like that. Of course, there are many there will be many figures close to the Republican, close to even Trump administration, who supports Somaliland independence. And again, as I mentioned before, the what happened during the election is a great spot for Somaliland, of course. I totally agree about it, so I, no doubt. But I think that the path is still long. So, yeah, that's what I do expect. I don't know if you want, I can move more on other issues.
No, that is fine. You know, I think we've covered most of the issues. And you know, I'll let you go. We've covered them. But maybe I'll just end with this. If you end with this, so in the long term, if you look at more broadly. How do you see beyond the Horn of Africa? How do you see Turkey's influence on the continent play out in relation to other, you know, middle powers and all that?
Yeah, I think that Turkey will keep this influence. I mean, Turkey is not a Gulf monarchy. The approach of Turkey since the beginning was completely different. They do not have money like the Gulf monarchy. So for the Gulf monarchy, it's easy. They just come and bring money and that everything goes well. For Turkey, it was different. So they have to develop a different approach. And the approach aimed to create long-lasting relationship. One of the biggest example, the major example, and from my point of view, is an external point of view, an analyst point of view, that even the biggest success of Turkey's strategy toward Africa was the scholarship program. They established these scholarship programs to bring African students to Turkey for university, for bachelor and master. And after the bachelor and master, they can choose if they want to stay in Turkey or move abroad, or if they want to come back to their own country. If they come back to their own country, they do not have to pay back the scholarship. If they decided to stay in Turkey or move abroad, they have to pay back 50% or even more of their scholarship. So in some way, this was a policy aimed to, I don't want to say force, but persuade African students to move back to their own country. And of course, with a master or bachelor from Turkish university, they could access to good position. Some of them are now part of the elite. Some of them are part of the middle class, African middle class. And of course, they've got a good relationship with Turkey. So I think that even in the post-Erdogan era, because sooner or later there will be a post-Erdogan era, Turkey will remain a player. I think that Turkey could be a useful player from the strategic point of view also for NATO country, because we have to remember that Turkey is, of course, is not an easy partner for Western countries, but is still a member of NATO. And this is something that in some way Turkey exploit with African partners as well. But at the same time, this could be useful in the next years for NATO, because NATO has a member who is able to operate within African continent in a different way in comparison with other European countries. So yeah, I do expect this from Turkey, different discourse for the Gulf monarchies. I do expect more engaged by Saudi Arabia. I think that Saudi Arabia is another interesting actor because they are shifting the core of the foreign policy from the Gulf to the Red Sea. This is part of the strategy of Mohammed bin Salman. He wanted to establish the new future city on the Red Sea. So, but at the same time, he wants to relaunch the idea of the Council of the Red Sea. He is engaged, of course, in Sudanese conflict. So I do expect more presence by Saudi Arabia in some way to counter the influence of UAE. So the biggest dynamics of the next year in the region, in the Red Sea region, will be this growing rivalry between UAE and Saudi Arabia.
Brilliant. Federico, thank you very much for your very rich insights. I really, really appreciate you for honoring our invitation. And thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you once again for tuning in to another exciting episode on the recent agreement, the Ankara Declaration between Somalia and Ethiopia. And, you know, Turkey's growing influence in the Horn of Africa and, you know, the whole of Africa. Join me as usual to thank our host, or our guest, Dr. Federico Donnelly, for his time and his analytical precision in this case. Until next week, stay blessed and I'll see you.